I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello, and welcome to the Don't Know Her podcast. I'm Michael.
And I am Scott. And we are here again to talk about an icon of cinema that we feel not celebrated quite as much as they ought to be. And this time round, we are delighted again to be joined by a fabulous guest. We have the wonderful Murtada Ofadl, culture writer and critic and host of the fabulous Sundays with Kate podcast. How are you doing today, Murtada?
Hello. Hi, Scott. Hi, Michael. I'm doing great. I'm so excited to talk to you and to talk to you about this actor we're talking about. It's so exciting.
We're so delighted that you brought this wonderful actress along with you. Tell us who you have brought and why you have done so.
So when you asked me to come on, I first of all, I just want to say I love Don't Know Her. I love the podcast. I love the title. This is a great sort of to talk about actors that people don't celebrate all the time. Because we end up talking about the same, I don't know, 12 actors who get nominated for Oscars every year. So I love this. I love the idea of it. I loved listening to you. And I love that you talked about so many of my favorite actors. So when you asked me, I was like, Alfre Woodard, but you've done her. Toni Collette, you've done her. Ruth Negga, you've done her. You've even done Harriet Walter.
So. Oh, well, hopefully you weren't scraping the barrel. I certainly don't think you were, because this is a fabulous pick. We love it.
No. Yeah, absolutely. It's a fabulous mix. And I didn't mean to say that we're scraping the barrel at all. I meant to say that you have done so many of all the wonderful actors that I love. And this is somebody I was happy to find that you haven't done. And it is the wonderful, the luminescent, Nicole Beharie.
She's fantastic. So like, when me and Scott, or Scott and I, if I'm going to be proper, as I'm in English, in England even, we came up with the idea for this podcast. She was so quick on my list. But of course, as we'll go into, her filmography is slight, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And even though I actually love her as a performer, I don't know, we just kept coming to other people. So I was thrilled when you came forward with Nicole, and I cannot wait to talk about her.
Yes. She's someone, like, she doesn't work as much. And I know she's been on a TV show here in America, which I've never seen, Sleepy Hollow, for a few years after sort of like her big breakout. So she was busy doing that for like 5 years, maybe. And that's probably why her filmography is not as big. But it is someone that, you know, the first movie I saw of her was Shame. And I really loved her performance in that. And then years later, I saw Miss Juneteenth, and that's when I was like, wow, where has she been? And Miss Juneteenth says, I think we're in 2022, so it came out 2 years ago now. I'm not sure. Is that right?
Yes, it did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just when to see her sort of like get that, you know, central role in a movie that's all about her, that just made me go back and be like, oh, what has she been doing, and why is she not in more things? But she is in more things. She has been in more things since that. So
thankfully, and lots of exciting things to come, which we hope you're going to be able to touch on for us a little bit later. She is just so mesmerizing. She's so gorgeous, and her energy is just wonderful. And now, from having gone back and watched some of these films, as we have kind of discussed with others, but I'm always excited to, is when you just see such versatility and range. She's someone, again, who feels different each time we see her on screen. The energy is there, the presence is there, but the actual character that she's performing as is wildly different each time, or I certainly found it to be different. And I find that to be the most magnetic thing to see an actor do on screen. So I'm so delighted to get to know more of Nicole, and therefore so glad you brought her, Murtada.
Yeah, I think what I really like about her is that, you know, we talked about her filmography, is she doesn't have a lot of movies, and in a lot of these movies, like in Shame, she's sort of like the girlfriend, or, you know, her character there is more of a plot point as opposed to like they want to show us like how to get the main character to the next point in the story, or she's playing just a wife or something like that. But what I like about what she does is that she always does the unexpected, even in these smaller roles where you kind of like go into a movie thinking, oh, I know this. I figured out this character. Yes, she's like I said, you know, luminous on screen, and she looks always amazing. And she's one of those actors, you know, who have the screen face, like the face that you can't look away from. So there is all that. So all she has to do, for lack of a better word, is pose, and we're still be enthralled. But what I love about her is that she always punctures those expectations, and she gives you something that you're not expecting, even when the role is maybe an expected role. And that's kind of, you know, we'll talk about it. We'll get into what she does in Shame and in 42 and American Violet, all these movies where the script is sort of like maybe obvious in the character, but she's not in the performance. And I think mm-hmm. that's why I'm excited to talk to you about her.
I was trying to think of like who would be a more famous and celebrated example of the sort of performer Nicole is. And you know who jumped to mind was Michelle Williams, who I think oftentimes is boxed into these sorts of, the sorts of roles you're talking about is what you'd expect, but somehow finds ways of making it pierce through the screen, like really like connect with you, no matter what the size of the role. And is also luminous and just, I think, a gift for a director to work with, because it feels like those sorts of actors can do anything they're asked. I'm going to do my part and I'm going to do it so well that everyone will remember me when they leave the screen.
Yeah.
So yeah, love it.
I love that. I love the idea of her puncturing through, because it is that. It is, she is the face, as you said, Murtada, like in a very classic way, and maybe quite similar to when we talked about, say, Ruth Negga, for example. Someone who has the face and the range that you're like, everyone should be scrambling to work with you, because you can bring that classic movie star value of a face that you truly can't look away from, but also you can deliver anything. I think there's so much in there, and because, like we've said, not enough so far, but hoping for a lot more, there's just so much potential, and I'm so excited to see what comes next.
So shall I give a brief rundown of Nicole's work so far before we get into the films individually?
Please do.
Yes, please.
Okay, so Nicole was born in 1985 in Florida. Her father worked in the United States Foreign Service, so she spent her childhood in the UK, Jamaica, Nigeria, and Panama before going into high school in South Carolina.
So I have something. So I interviewed Nicole, and I think something that maybe is not, that I was surprised she told me in that interview, which we'll talk about. She said that, yes, she was born in America, but I think her parents are from somewhere in the Caribbean, because she said she's West Indian, but she always plays African-American. That was like a little thing, an aside that she said to me in the interview. And I'm like, oh, okay. So yes, she was born and grew up in America, but I think that's where she comes from.
Great. Yeah. And she went to, well, if you're going to be an actor, where else would you go but the Juilliard School? A very prestigious performing arts school, graduating in 2007.
So she was just with two very famous Juilliard graduates, Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac, in Scenes from a Marriage. But I think just looking at when they were born, they were probably not at Juilliard at the same time. They are a little older than her.
That is, I'm still going to dream or think about them having like great times as students.
Yeah, they were together. It happened. It was wonderful. We love that for them.
Doing all sorts of like Chekhov, Tennessee Williams, all sorts. That is going to fund my imagination for a few days now. But yeah, like all of her fears or whatever about TV and film seems to go out the window, because in 2008, she gets a leading role in American Violet, a film we will definitely talk about, where we do also get to talk about Alfre Woodard again, as we always love to. And from there, like her film career includes, as we've talked about, Shame in 2011, My Last Day Without You in 2011, 42 with Chadwick Boseman in 2013. I'm going to assume that we do not have a future remake of 42 coming out. And most famously, most celebrated, is her role in Miss Juneteenth in 2020. She wins the award for Best Actress at the Gotham Independent Film Awards. She's nominated for Best Female Lead at the Independent Spirit Awards. She would be totally deserving of a Best Actress Oscar nomination too, but that did not happen. And yeah, Miss Juneteenth is a real beautiful film that if anybody listening to this does one thing afterwards, I hope they watch that film and we'll get into. But I don't know if people would maybe recognize her from some of her TV work. So she's appeared in The Good Wife, an episode of Black Mirror, Little Fires Everywhere, Solos. As you've mentioned before, she's had a stint in Sleepy Hollow from 2013 to 2016, which, as you probably rightly predict, took up a lot of her acting time. And most recently, with those beautiful people, Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaac, and also, oh my God, Corey Stoll, yes. The most beautiful foursome you could think of in Scenes from a Marriage, which I've only watched one episode of, but all beautiful people doing beautiful work.
Well, she's only in that one episode. Is it the first episode? She's just in that one.
Well, then what's the point in watching the rest? I'm glad you've told me now.
She's just in that one,
But yeah, that's kind of it for now with Nicole. She does have two very exciting films coming up.
Yeah, so I think she's in two movies coming out later this year. Honk for Jesus, I think, is one. And the other one is 892. Actually, the title of the first one is Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. That's a full title, so...
And that's with another one of our faves here, Regina Hall.
Yeah.
Cannot wait for that. But yeah, so it's a really interesting filmography and probably the least prolific actor we've spoken about yet. But I would argue from the work she's already done, we should be collectively talking about Nicole much more.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, when you look, and I haven't seen American Violet when it came out, so maybe I'm part of the problem. I actually sought it out after I saw her in Shame first, but like, that's a debut. Like, I think she had just graduated from Juilliard. She was the lead of this movie, and you know, we'll talk about the movie, and you know, I have quibbles with it or whatever, but like, it's such a fantastic sort of debut performance to be the lead of a movie that's centered around your character. You get to play a range of emotions. And I guess I didn't see the movie when it came out because maybe it wasn't as well distributed. And that's probably why it didn't lead to more things. But it led to a few things that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with American Violet, because you're right. I also hadn't seen it when it came out. I hadn't even heard of it probably when it came out. So it's released in 2000, it premieres at the Telluride Festival in 2008, and is more widely released in 2009. But it's a story set against the 2000 Gore versus Bush presidential election vote count, sort of, what would you call it, controversies. We see Nicole, who's a mother to four children, many children.
I think you're right. It's four.
Four children. Her mother, Alfre Woodard, is looking after them as she goes off to work in a diner. At this time, there's a raid on their housing estate, and it is a drug raid, and they're looking for Nicole.
D, you ain't done nothing to get all caught up in this mess, have you? I mean, somebody said that they was looking for you.
Mama, you know I don't have nothing to do with that.
I know that. I know.
It's my parking tickets. I got, $782.
$782? Good Lord! Girl! Jail, you can buy a car for that much money.
I know, Mama.
And I guess this is a bit of the movie where it's like, okay, this is fucked up. Because she is kind of accepting the very aggressive behavior of the police, even though it's just about these parking tickets. So it's kind of like this kind of casual violence. Mm-hmm. And this is the start of the film. Then she finds out she's being accused of selling drugs near a school. She has, all we know about this woman, and this is down to Nicole's performance, I think, really, is that she hasn't done it. Like, she is wrongly accused. She's as far removed as drugs as she could possibly be. And it is just like such an attention grabbing, like, setup of a story. And so you watch her as she's fighting the system, which is incredibly corrupt, to prove her innocence, which is self-evident. And there's this loads of this, like, her ex-husband, or I don't even know if they're married, her ex-partner, the father of the children, his current partner, Alfred Woodard, giving lots of very motherly advice, which is welcome and not welcome at different points. It's just really, you know, you see her less of a victim, even though she is so, and more of this woman, like, working towards proving herself. And this is, like, in a long line of, you know, great American films of real life stories of women fighting against the system. And it's less Hollywoodified than, say, Erin Brockovich or something like that. But
yeah,
it is, like, easy to get behind Nicole and be like, yeah, you know, you prove yourself. Like, this is fucked up.
Yeah, and I think what you mentioned is that the thrust of the narrative is about this corruption in this small town in Texas. It's about, you know, the DA and the police coming together to basically to just drive up conviction. So they just arrest Black people willy-nilly. And it's, I think the it's based on a true story, and it's about this specific law in Texas that one person can say, oh, hey, Michael, you sold drugs to me, and then you can be indicted just based on that. So that's how the Nicole's character, I think her name is Dee, is arrested, is because they get somebody played by Anthony Mackie to say that she sold drugs to him, and obviously she didn't. So she's innocent from the beginning.
Yeah, and all of this is, so the film, and I'm really interested to hear what everyone else thinks, is the way that it's constructed is pretty televisual mostly, which is a shame, because it would have really benefited from a cinematic kind of mode of storytelling.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the film sort of suffers a little bit from earnest do good, sort of, like, it's trying to do good and shine a light on this particular law in Texas and tell this woman's story. But I think where it's successful is in giving the space to people like Nicole and Ashley Woodard and Anthony Mackie to sort of build these characters. Like, they have a stock villain character in the DA who's just like, you see him and you're like, oh, it's as if, you know, he's tattooed on his forehead racist. But the other characters played by Nicole and by Alfrey are given these moments to tell us the story in a way that's sort of like unharried. And sort of like one of my theories about Nicole is that she sometimes will make the filmmakers go to the rhythm of her performance, because she will take the time to just be still, have the rhythm of the character she's played. Sometimes is fast, but a lot of the times it's slower, where she take in moments. And this is kind of one of the things that I love about her. And in this, she has those moments, but she also has moments where she's very intense, even violent sometimes. And I think that sort of contrast in your screen debut is like, it was an amazing opportunity. And yeah, you get to see a lot of her range. Despite, you know, this is not a great film. Like, it's not a great film.
No, it's not. No, it's very on the nose. I think there's a lot of, it's not one you'd recommend people seek out, because she has got to present these skills. We feel very strongly that she did make that presence felt in Shame. And so did you, Murtada, see Shame in the cinema?
I did see Shame in the cinemas. I mean, I was already, you know, a fan of both Steve McQueen and Michael Fassbender with Hunger, and Michael Fassbender was of course, the Andy Arnold movie, Fish Tank. It was one of those movies that you're waiting for it to come out. So I definitely saw it opening weekend, yeah.
Yeah, and he was such an exciting, I mean, he is still to a point, I guess, an exciting actor, but at that time, like, his career felt like, God, he's going to be another Daniel Day-Lewis or, mm-hmm. any of those sorts of people. And he is incredible in Shame. And Scott, what about you? You're the youngster. Did you see Shame in the cinema? You never see anything I saw in the cinema.
Well, I was very excited to see Shame in the cinema because I, mostly at that point, I was just so excited to see Carey Mulligan in a role that was a huge departure for her. So Shame, from the trailer and everything, I was like, this I need immediately.
It was such a good trailer. I remember that trailer.
Yeah, it was so effective. And just, it was being talked about for a long time and then the trailer dropped and I was just like, oh yeah. Yeah, and I was really taken with it at the time.
And it came to cinemas like with a lot of credentials, because he had won Best Actor at Venice and the movie was like, went to all these festivals and people were like, really into it, and you know, and so it was like, ooh, when is Shame coming out? Let's go, Fassbender.
Yeah, and it felt like it was, and it still does to a point, it's talking about a subject matter we don't really have many stories of, like about a man in his 30s addicted to sex and like living in a city and just trying, like a few different incidents happen, like his sister, played by Cara Mulligan, arrives. And his computer is taken away from him at work, where he's been watching porn. So he's a bit on edge about that. And his boss wants to go socializing, like kind of trip him up, let's say, on his like well-managed kind of day-to-day life. But we don't get many stories about that, really. I mean, we get plenty of stories about men, don't get me wrong, particularly heterosexual white men. But it does feel different, and it still does, rewatching it for this. I loved it when it came out. I thought it was really like, this is art, like this is cinema. This is, you know, this is as exciting as filmmaking can be. Now I feel a little more reserved about it because I'm like, oh, well, it's still, like it's dark. I'm not sure I want to spend time. I'm not sure what I'm getting out of it in terms of the exploration of these characters or this character in particular. There's a kind of a trope about suicide. But yeah, again, as the first time I saw it, it's Nicole that I came out being like, oh, I just wish the story veered more towards her character, who is offering Michael Fassbender, well, not offering, that's too literal, but she's there to represent, like, she wants romance, he doesn't, she believes in these things, she's been married, she's been divorced, but she doesn't really mind, like, she gave it a go, what's there to lose? Like, she is not afraid of commitment, as opposed to Michael Fassbender, who is totally afraid of commitment. But
you know, in America, we don't get that many movies about sex. And it's funny that this is sort of an American movie where it's set and the characters are all supposed to be American, but it's made by all these British people, except for Nicole Beharie, who is one of the few Americans in the cast. You know, both Michael Fassbender and Carey Mulligan, of course, and Steve McQueen. And I think the writer.
I'm going to stop you there. Michael Fassbender is Irish.
Oh, okay.
He's Irish German. Only, I feel like Scott was staring at me, being like, "Michael's going to lose his
precious." Head. He's precious about Ireland, Mortada.
No, don't worry. From those two islands that are close to each other in North Europe.
I still think it's amazing. I think this film is amazing. I was expecting to watch it again and think a lot less of it. And I think I agree with you that there are things like the sort of playing on certain tropes that I don't think are as well handled as they ought to be. But I think this is perfect filmmaking going on, even if the final outcome is not entirely perfect. I think how Fassbender is framed, this kind of phantom presence, like ghostly in the film, I think it's beautiful, and every beat is very beautiful and very exciting. But coming back to it this time, for me, it was Nicole, as you describe her, Michael, as the kind of romantic.
Wasn't married long, gave it a shot, didn't really work out.
Oh.
Wow.
What?
Do you just seem like
what?
Averse to the whole idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just don't understand why people would want to get married, especially nowadays. I mean, I don't see the point.
In relationships.
It doesn't seem realistic.
Are you serious? I mean.
Yeah. No, really.
Well, then, you know,
Why are we here? We don't matter to one another.
Everything is so sensual and alluring, and she plays it so well that anyone would fall over themselves to be with this woman. So she certainly needn't settle for somebody in his position. But I guess him being kind of aloof is probably part of the appeal there. But yeah, what about it more for you in reflection, Murtada?
I mean, I think her part is a very hard part to play.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the story, like the Michael character and the Carrie character, even the boss at the work, they all at work who gets attracted to Carrie and maybe they sleep together, whatever. All of these people are like real people with motivations in the story. And she seems to be one, she's more of a plot device. Like they have to tell us the story of like, oh, here's someone that this sex addict, this very bad person who can't come to terms with all his addictions, with his past, with the things that are driving him. This is the beam of light that offers him, you know, a glimpse into a future that is better, happier, that he rejects and does everything to jeopardize. So the character, I think her name is Marianne, is more of a plot device than an actual character. But I love what Nicole does with it, because what she's playing a woman who's obviously attracted to her coworker. She finds him sexy. She wants to sleep with him. But at the same time, she's also maybe wants to date him, because she's always trying, like in the few scenes together, there is that scene where they're walking to the subway and she's trying to figure out who he is. And then in the next scene, and in that scene, he's actually giving her a little bit of information, showing that he's attracted to her, asking her on a second date. And you can see in her face that she's enjoying all of this and she's happy about it. And in the next scene where they go on a date to the to a restaurant, and this is where he's trying to jeopardize every moment. Like he's just, in that scene, he's trying everything to sort of make her not interested in him because he's facing his demons and all of these things. But look at her face in that scene. She's perplexed. It's like, what is this dude? I don't know him. Maybe he's an asshole. But at the same time, she's still attracted to him. And I think, again, you know, we talk about the facets that she brings to these performances. Like you see that dichotomy in her face. She doesn't have a lot to say in that scene because they're talking about, you know, banal things about, you know, how many relationships have you been in, and, you know, small talk, date small talk. But just watch Nicole Beharie in that scene, and all of these emotions are on her face. And she makes a meal out of this part that I think is maybe four scenes and not that well written, not that interesting, frankly, but she's very interesting.
Exactly.
And I love how that date ends is with him kind of turning itself around to be like, we'll get to do this again. And she, like, she's walking away and the camera like stays with Michael Fassbender looking down the subway steps, and you just hear her say back like, maybe. And it's just like, she does hold power with a man who likes control. So it flips it almost on its head from what you expect that date to be. So I did really enjoy that moment. This is it. The romantic me was like, oh, well, what would be the other option? But then I don't have a sex addiction, so I can't like relate to what
that we know. Like, what,
or is this a double bluff?
it's that's so interesting what you say about him at the top of the stairs looking down. Another thing that I love about this film is that Steve McQueen kind of gives so little of these nods, and you know so much from them. A bathroom door closing, looking out of a window. Each thing is loaded because he's gotten you there. He's sort of brought all of these things into the beginning and introduced characters so effectively that it just takes these kind of subtle things, and you can understand power dynamics and you can understand history and relationships just from the slightest thing. And that side of it, I think, is genius.
Yeah. So when I interviewed Nicole, and I interviewed her in the run after she was nominated for the Gossam for Miss Juneteenth, so this was early 2021, maybe, something like that. But anyway, when I interviewed her, she brought up shame. I didn't even ask her about it. She brought it up as, you know, I asked her who she wanted to work with, and she's like, she wanted to work again with Steve McQueen because he saw her in a completely different way. She said, up until that time, she was playing all these sort of righteous people who have no sexuality. And so she was really happy to work with Steve McQueen, who saw her as this woman who was like, yeah, she wanted to have a one night stand with this man that she found hot, and why not? And so she, I think maybe that's why we see all these things, but because she relished this opportunity to do something that maybe until that point she hadn't done in the movies that she made or in the other parts that she played.
Yeah, God, I would love if they reunited for something. Well, the next film that we have decided to talk about for this podcast comes in 2013. And it's another supporting performance to another great actor, with 42, where Nicole plays Rachel Robinson. I'm so glad this film was suggested, because this is going to sound really boring, but as like a non-American, like I would hear in different sorts of American events the name Jackie Robinson, but absolutely know nothing about it. I know nothing about baseball. I barely know anything about soccer or Gaelic football in Ireland. Like, I don't know much about sport. This film, for me anyway, was more like an information, like an educational tool. Like, And I guess in some ways that's how it's set up. It's like a history of this baseball player, and played by Chadwick Boseman, and how with Harrison Ford's help, of course, he changed the face of baseball forever. I found it really charming. I mean, Murtada, I think you're the best person to give any sort of initial feedback on this film, mainly because it feels so distant to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is very distant for me too, because I am neither American nor do I understand baseball, but I do live in this country, so.
Okay, we need to get some heterosexual man on the podcast to talk about this movie. Watching this ball, is it a 2-hour movie? I'm like, he has to throw the ball and he throws it in a certain way, and that's important. I don't know.
There is a lot of baseball in this movie too, and you know, as a gay man, I do live in America, but I've lived here for a long time, but I never watched baseball. I don't know anyone who watches baseball. I think I worked in corporate America for a few years, and I was invited to a baseball game by my boss, who obviously does not know me. By my boss at the time. So I did go to one baseball game in my life, but I think I was so grateful that Nicole Beharie is in this movie, because you can just ignore the baseball and ignore Harrison Ford's big blustery performance, and you know, with the wig and the face and everything that he's trying to do, which is not bad, but I don't know, maybe he didn't seem to be in the same movie with Chadwick and Nicole, who are so wonderful together. In this, you know, their story is not the main story, but it is, you know, she plays Rachel Robinson, who was married to Jackie Robinson. So, and you know, when you read the sort of, you'd read about this movie, like this movie was supposed to, or at least a movie about Jackie Robinson was supposed to be made by Spike Lee, and then that didn't happen. And, you know, it went years and years and years, and Robert Redford was going to do it, and he was going to play the Harrison Ford character, and then that didn't happen. And so in the end, Brian Helgeland did it. But throughout all this, Rachel Robinson was sort of always gave her her blessing to a movie being made about her husband. And I think that's probably why you see these, again, you know, I'm going to, you know, we talked with American Valley about the tenderness that Nicole brings to these women. And there is such a loving tenderness that she, in her scenes with Chadwick Boseman, the movie starts, they already know each other. They've maybe been dating for a while, because their first scene together is he asks her to marry him over the phone. And, you know, I'm on record that one of your other subjects in your wonderful podcast, Ruth Negga, is the best phone actor, you know, from Loving.
Yeah.
But I think Nicole is very good on this phone.
We don't owe the world a thing, only each other.
Jack, what are you talking about? What is going on? What happened?
Will you marry me, Ray?
Absolutely. When?
And you expect her, when he asks her to marry him over the phone, you expect that maybe, you know, the usual thing, you know, probably, you know, a bad screenwriter would write something like, you know, her face lights up and a bad actor will try to do the face lighting up somehow. But what she does is that, you know, she snorts. Instead of a face lighting up, she does this snort, which tells me that maybe she was expecting this and she's kind of happy, like, finally, you asked me to marry you, which is not kind of, again, it's not what you're expecting in that scene. You're expecting the face light up and she responds with a snort. And I just found that to be so wonderful. And it's sort of, this is her first scene in the movie and it sets the tone. It gives us this, you know, it tells us again, you know, this history of these two people together. Like, that's a reaction of somebody, you know, you've been with this person for a long time. You want to marry them, but also this is like, you know, why hasn't it happened before? Or a relief that it's happening. However you interpret it, it's not just like, I'm so happy to marry you. It's different. And I think she sets the tone that way.
And too often, I'm thinking of, like, say, Kristin Scott Thomas in The Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman, kind of just sitting there, you know, an Oscar-nominated, celebrated actor doing nothing to just showcase a man in a biopic. Mm-hmm. But Nicole somehow doesn't fall into those sorts of traps. But it probably is because Rachel was involved and somehow the story is arced a little bit. Like, there's the baseball story, but then there's the arc of their relationship. Which is lovely. And again, going back to the romantic in me, that is very satisfying to watch. If you have to watch Shame, 42 is a very good flip side of that.
I like 42. I think maybe I had hoped somebody who was so integral to the history of America as Jackie Robinson would maybe get a slightly better movie. Mm. It is a fine movie. It's not a bad movie by any means, but it is to a lot of ways a sort of by the book sort of biopic. Like, let's highlight the big things that Jackie Robinson did, but also I think what I take a little bit of issue is, like, also let's highlight this other white man, which is the character played by Harrison Ford. But also, I think understanding Jackie Robinson, you maybe need to understand, I can't remember what the character's name is, but he was the owner of the Brooklyn Dodgers, the team that Jackie Robinson played. But sort of what I, you know, the moments that I loved are the moment between Chadwick Boseman and Nicole. And I think what Brian Helgeland, the director, what he really has done well, and what I loved about the way that he framed Nicole, is that he understood that she has that face and she has those eyes. So a lot of the scenes, he's filming her from above, so she has to look up, and then you see the eyes. So he, as a director, I think he sort of understood that. And as somebody who loves watching Nicole's face, I just enjoyed those moments. And I'm like, okay, Brian Helgeland, you know where to put the camera when Nicole Behar is in the frame. Thank you.
And yeah, Chadwick Boseman, I guess it would be amiss not to mention him. I think he's always just so charismatic to watch. But he's really lovely to watch in this film. Yeah. As this sort of, like, aspirational, very talented, apparently, because that's what everyone keeps saying, but baseball player who loves his wife and, like, loves, you know, the sport and has a passion for it and is kind of, I don't know if you'd say accidental sort of hero, but he finds himself in a position to make change and he's embracing it as best as he can while, you know, putting his priorities as, like, passion for his wife and passion for his sport. So I thought he was good. Better, like, Harrison Ford, you're dead right. Watching them together is like, like watching, I don't even know. So he's like, you know, tearing down the scenery, Harrison Ford, where Chadwick's, like, found the character and is like kind of lovingly portraying it. So it is a shame, even from that sort of director's point of view, like, you wouldn't have got that. I don't think Robert Redford would have let that happen. But at least it's fun. It's a fun film. But it is interesting that the last film that we're going to be talking about kind of is the opposite in some ways of 42, or a film like 42, which is Miss Juneteenth. It is a film that a low budget film, I guess, is the is one like an aesthetic of it, but has this story, like has such a genuine story. It's very naturalistic. You're following this woman played by Nicole in another lead role, go through in some ways ordinary time of her life, but in other ways like these monumental, like the stakes are so high for things that for other people kind of are nothing. It is such a like genuine story that is character focused, specific on her character. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's gorgeous. Like I have, like we were talking about before recording, Murtada, when I first watched it, I remember I had rented it or something. It was during lockdown, wasn't it? So I'd watched it like twice as I had the time frame to have it. And then when it became freely available, I watched that again and I watched it again for this. I just find it really refreshing or something to watch and to spend time with Nicole and this story, which I should say before we continue, is about a woman who in her younger years was crowned Miss Juneteenth.
So Miss Juneteenth, so Juneteenth is commemorates sort of the date that slaves in Texas were freed. So basically in Texas, the slave owners didn't tell their slaves that the law was passed, and it didn't happen until 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation when slaves in Texas knew that they were free. And this is Juneteenth, so it's in June. That's why it's Juneteenth. And I think the title, the Miss Juneteenth, this is a pageant celebrating or commemorating that Emancipation Proclamation Day. So
yeah, and the winner gets a scholarship to a university. It is in like from what you see in the film, it seems to be like elevating or an aspirational thing for a certain group of women. And as we see, like, so for Nicole's character, she's all for this being a great opportunity for herself and her daughter. Her daughter does not agree with her that this is what she should be putting all of her hopes and dreams and actually their little income in, because they have to spend crazy amounts of money on dresses and things like that.
So Nicole has won Miss Juneteenth when she was a teenager, and now she's trying to get her daughter to win it. So the movie takes place in, you know, in the summer when the daughter is preparing to win, but the daughter has other things that she's interested in, and she's not really interested in this title, even though it comes with a scholarship. But what I loved about what you said, Michael, in your introduction, is that it's a character study, and it's also not just a character study, but it has a feel for that part in Texas. It's about this particular community in Texas. So we see the Nicole character, her daughter, her mother, who is a church person. What do you call them? A pastor in a church.
I love it. This is it. We can't do sport. We can't do religion. These are subjects we just can't talk about.
Yes, pastor in the church, and it's and you know, and the Nicole character works at a bar, so you see the people, the guy who owns the bar, and the people who come to the bar, and so, and I think the director Channing Godfrey Peoples is somebody who also maybe went to pageants and maybe won Miss Juneteenth. I'm not sure, but I think she was definitely somebody who participated in pageants and is from that part of Texas. And so she's able, she has like a real feel for that part of town, for those pageants and for the people in that part of Texas. And you feel that in the movie, and the movie is so wonderful for being rooted in this very, just, you feel that it's rooted in something real, I think is what I wanted to say.
Yeah, she at the heart of it is doing a beautiful job, and the character itself, of presenting kind of conflict in yourself and conflict in your own situation, but always striving towards betterment and opportunity. I think it's a lot about opportunity and what that presents, and then through the generations. So she herself winning Miss Juneteenth, where she sort of ended up in life, you have the kind of the lady who led her towards her pageant victory years before. You sense her wishing she'd done more with her life. And you can sense Nicole Beharie's character feeling that hurt, perhaps it not, but then putting that into her daughter. but she's still very honest and genuine to her roots and where she's at, and isn't turning against that. However, it's still pushing her daughter in a way that just suggests such internal conflict and wishing for her daughter what she maybe didn't achieve herself. But the balance is again wonderful. She plays this so beautifully. And there's a scene in particular which really stood out to me, where she doesn't have enough money to buy her daughter a dress for the pageant. And then she relies on her husband to have gotten this money, but he, due to his own circumstances, does not have it either. And there's a moment where she just looks entirely defeated by it, having this conversation with him and wondering their direction. So much, again, conflict in her head about how has she landed at this point? How has she landed her daughter at this point? And everything in her face is a work of magic. It's incredible.
Yeah, and she also does this specific Texas accent. You know, I know we talked a little bit about accent off mic, but I think this is, you know, I would never have recognized this as a Sudani who lives in America. I can't do accents. I would have never recognized this accent. But when I interviewed her, she talked to me about how she went to that part of Texas for a few weeks, a couple of weeks before, and she worked in a bar for 2 days to sort of like get a feel for how this woman will behave and how she will talk. And she met with people from the town that they filmed in to sort of like get, and she's like, you know, I would be sort of interviewing them. She's like, okay, I'll take this from this person, but I don't think I can do that accent. So maybe I'll just stick to this one. So it's fun that, you know, there is, and that all is, it shows, because in the movie, it doesn't really show. Like, it's not a showy performance, but this is kind of, you know, why I love her as an actor, is that she did all this work. And in the end, she gave this very subtle, very sort of quiet, even meditative performance. But there is a lot of work behind it. And maybe this is why she does not, not a lot of people know her, or why she hasn't won that many awards, is because, you know, in the end, she makes all these subtler, quieter choices. Because this, you know, this performance could have gone, you know, somebody else could have made it bigger. And she did win the Gossam Award, but maybe if she had gone a little bigger, she would have won more awards. But I wouldn't change anything about it. I think it's really such a wonderful performance.
There's this this moment watching it this time that really struck me, that like there's so much in it where she could have been bigger or campier, or like when she's signing her daughter up for the pageant. So she's won this pageant. She's, in the eyes of the people that are running it, who remember her, did not live up to their expectations. She meets various people, two in particular, who, the way they interact, Nicole is so like, whose name we should say is Turquoise. She's so like composed, like she's obviously prepared herself for this. You can see the learning from taking part in the Miss Juneteenth, I'm assuming, and how she's interacting with these characters.
It slipped my mind that you have a daughter old enough to be in the pageant. How old are you?
14, about to be 15.
About to be.
Good luck to you both.
What's her problem?
I beat her.
But Nicole brings this sort of just wonderful energy. And I think that's why I'm so drawn back to this film, because I think even like Nicole and the film as a whole, because it's so like built upon her, it's just so lovely and loving, even, and supportive. And not to give anything away, but it ends in an optimistic note. Like, you feel like this character has progressed, this story is going to move forward, and everyone is, including the audience, are a little bit better for everything that has just happened.
Yeah.
So I love it.
Yeah, me too. I love it so much. And she has such great chemistry, like with Kendrick Samson, who plays sort of her on-again, off-again boyfriend.
Sexy situation there.
There's a lot of sexiness. I this episode.
Yeah. They're both so sexy. They're, and in those scenes together, they look amazing. And you kind of like, you know, and they're sort of shot in this like it's the scenes are mostly at night, so there's this like glow that's sort of glistening off their skins. It's so beautiful, just, you know, aesthetically beautiful to look at.
Yeah. It's so stunning. Do you think this is the best showcase of her? Do you think this is her best performance, Murtada?
I think it's absolutely her best performance. And I think the best movie she's been in. Like, I love Shame, but, you know, you can't, that's not a Nicole Beharie film.
Sure.
Like, this is definitely, like, if there is one movie you want to watch for Nicole Beharie, it's this one. And I think, I love that it's such a showcase for her. And it's like, she's in almost every scene. And she is just, she sort of like takes this character and runs with it. But again, you know, like, you know, we were talking earlier, like, she does the unexpected. Like, she doesn't give you a big, loud performance. She gives you a slow, quiet, meditative performance and tells you this woman's story, and you just can't. Like, I feel sometimes like, you know, the movie sort of just goes slower and slower because of what she's doing. And I think my favorite scene in this movie, and I think this is the main still of the film, or I think it's also the poster, and it's a quiet scene where it's after a day of doing all the things that she does at the bar, and, you know, being tired, and she's wearing boots and she's outside of her house, and she puts the tiara that she won as Miss Juneteenth years earlier, and she just sits there, and the camera sort of like pans closer to her. And it's just, you know, this woman is just sitting there thinking about her life, about her choices, about maybe what she missed. She doesn't say anything in that scene, but she doesn't need to, because in her face, you see everything. You see everything that we've been trying to figure out about Turquoise for the last hour. I think that scene is maybe a little bit over an hour into the movie. And it's just, it's so wonderful. And it's one of those scenes where it makes you appreciate the actor. It makes you appreciate the director, that they both took time to like stand still and show as this character, unadorned, just with her emotion, nobody around her. And she's so unselfconscious, as if the camera is not there. It's just so wonderful.
Love that. Agreed completely.
And well, actually, before we go move on from Miss Juneteenth, do you think she should have been nominated for an Oscar?
Yes, absolutely. So this is the year Frances McDormand won for Nomadland, and they were both nominated at the Gossam Awards, and so she won over Frances McDormand. But the Gossams do that, you know, they always give it to the underdog, which, great, we love that. Yes, I think she should have been nominated, but now I'm trying to find out who the five were so I can know whose nomination would I take.
Yeah, well, we have Viola Davis in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Andra Day in the Billie Holiday film, Vanessa Kirby, Pieces of a Woman, Carrie Mulligan, Promising Young Woman, and as you mentioned, Frances McDormand. In general, a pretty good lineup, but I would still be voting for Nicole somewhere.
I think I would take away Frances.
Whoa, Murtada, bold.
See, me and Scott nearly lost our friendship over this, where I was like, Frances might be the best, but she doesn't need another Oscar.
It's like
I'm all about spread the wealth.
Like, it's big for Vanessa Kirby and Andra Day to get nominated and be Oscar nominees. It's big for Carrie Mulligan to finally get that second Oscar nomination after I don't know how many years. And it's also wonderful that Viola and Chadwick got a his and hers nomination. So Frances is the one who doesn't need this nomination Oscar.
I do agree with that. I do agree with that. And I would be way more on board if I didn't think that her performance was one of the best of the decade. But I'm with you. She didn't necessarily need another so soon as well.
Murtada, you can join any time that we need to gang up on Scott, because this is the first time he's agreed to this scenario.
Scott, whose nomination would you take?
Out of those, I would take away Carrie Mulligan's nomination.
Scott will no longer be on the podcast. I'm only joking. Only love is here. I would, do you know what? I would probably place her quite high if you were ranking them anyway, so...
But what I'm really excited to hear about is some films that we haven't yet had the pleasure of seeing. So, Murtada, tell us about your Sundance experience and whet our appetites.
Yes, so Nicole has two movies that are going to come out sometime in 2022. I think the first one is 892. I think that one is coming out here in America in the summer. So I saw both these movies at the Sundance Film Festival in January. As I call it, Sundance on my laptop because of COVID. It was a virtual festival. But I was happy to watch all these movies.
Good, okay.
So 892 is like a lot of Sundance movies, it is a movie directed by a first-time filmmaker, and their name is A.B. Corbin, and it is, like American Violets, a true story about injustice in the American South against African Americans. So it's kind of similar to that, but this one stars Joan Boyega as this former Marine Corps veteran who is in trouble, and there is something to do with the bank. So he goes into the bank and holds a couple of bank employees as hostages for a bomb threat until the bank sort of did him wrong and he lost his veteran savings or something like that. I'm sorry that I'm not into the mechanics of the plot. But anyway, he holds them with a bomb threat in the bank. He holds them, what do you call it?
Holding them hostage.
Yes. Sorry, I completely forgot the word hostage.
It happens.
So Joan Boyega holds them hostage, and Nicole is the bank manager. But what happens is that obviously, like, we are on his side because he's been done wrong, and he's been sort of cornered into this. And it's based on a true story. But what I love about this movie and what I love about all Nicole's performances, she's not a very huge part of this movie. I would say the late, great Michael K. Williams plays the hostage negotiator. So most of the movie is between the two characters played by Boyega and Williams. But Nicole, in her supporting part, she is so level-headed, so down to earth, so understands, like the character understands all that's happening and is trying to save herself and her employees. And Nicole, again, brings this sort of groundedness to her performance. And I was just watching this movie, and Boyega is great, and Michael K. Williams is amazing, and all of that. But I was just like, just stick with Nicole. Like, can we just... And it just made me... And, you know, at this point, I think Miss Juneteenth is 2 years old. So I was just like, when is her next Miss Juneteenth and why... Is she not the lead of this movie? Not that she could have played Boyega's character, obviously, because it's based on a true story. But but she's so wonderful in it and gives the movie a lot of pesos and makes it a better experience for her presence.
Amazing.
As she has done with all these movies we've talked about. And then other movie that she was in at Sundance is with Regina Hall, and this is Hong for Jesus, Save Your Soul.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a satire about church, about sort of Southern churches, and Regina Hall and Sterling K. Brown play these two pastors of a church. They are dealing with the scandal that he's gay, and so you get to see Sterling K. Brown shirtless a lot in this movie, so that's... and Nicole is, and her, she plays sort of her and her character and the character's husband are rival pastors in another church. So as the scandal unfolds, that church sort of becomes more successful. People go there. And again, she only has two scenes or maybe three or four, something like that. But it is a completely different register for her because this movie is a satire. It's comedy. She's basically playing, what's the Reese Witherspoon character from Election? Tracy Flick. She's playing Tracy Flick.
Okay.
It's she was the pastor of a black church in Atlanta.
Stunning.
Love it. Oh my. I'm so excited for that film in particular. Oh, how great. Well, hopefully there'll be more stuff coming I was going to say coming Nicole's way. I feel like coming our way, but via Nicole. Because
yeah, right? Wouldn't we be so lucky if she was in every movie, or at least in two or three a year? But there are, these are two movies that are coming out this year. So I think, and yeah, they're so different. And, you know, she again shows her range. You know,
yeah,
one is a satire. The other is this intense hostage drama. So it's completely different movies, different registers she has to play, completely different characters. And again, but there's always that face, that sort of,
yeah,
she's always gives you the unexpected when you're, and it was really fun to watch her, especially in Hung for Jesus, play something I don't think she has done before, to do that sort of like
amazing
big personality satire.
And you recommend them both for people to catch when they come out?
I do, with reservations, like, you know, I don't want to be the one to be like, these are the movies of the year. They're obviously not that, but they have their small pleasures.
Great.
Both of them.
Okay. Well, good. Well, anything, Nicole, we are absolutely thrilled about. So I'm sure we'll be getting our tickets. Fabulous. Thanks so much for sharing that, Murtada. My appetite is whet. Okay. Well, on that note, it's time for me to challenge you both in this episode's quiz. I hope you're both ready.
Ready. Let's go.
I feel like, Murtada, you have a... too much of an advantage, seeing as you've spoken directly to Nicole and I have been nowhere near her, but I gladly will take you on and see how bad maybe I am.
Yes. Let's see if I can play to my advantage, because I am very bad at quizzes, so.
Oh, well, you might be then pleased or not so pleased to know that this is a bit of a Nicole adjacent quiz. So maybe being well versed in Nicole isn't going to be the most helpful thing. But let's
darn.
See how you I'm still sure you're going to do fabulously. So as is our tradition with a quiz, we need the winner to have a prize themed around our star of the moment. Murtada, is there any Nicole themed prize that you would love to get if you win against Michael here?
I won the tiara from Miss Juneteenth.
A perfect choice.
That is the only choice. I'm also going to go with that as my prize.
Perfect.
If I do win.
Tiara's up for grabs. You can wear it, sit on the step, smoke a cigarette, ponder life. It's going to be a beautiful moment for either of you.
Yeah. I might have to get a wig to put the tiara on.
No, you can make it work. I think that looked great.
Stunning. I believe.
I mean, I know this is only audio, so for our listeners, I am bald. I have no hair, so...
But tiara. But
where are the rules that say you need hair to have a tiara?
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna take that. I'm just wear the tiara if I win with no win.
So thankfully, during this episode, we have talked a lot about the Gotham Awards. So the Gotham Awards, an awards body that celebrates independent filmmaking, and interestingly, I think it was just this year that they've swapped towards lead performance as the category. However, they did a draw and there was a male and female winner of the award. However, the Best Actress Award has existed at the Gothams between 2013 and 2020. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the year, I'm going to give you the director, and I just want you to tell me the winner of the Best Actress Prize at the Gotham Awards. We're going to start with you, Murtada, and hopefully you don't feel hard done by the fact that this is maybe a slightly easy one. 2020... and the director is Channing Godfrey Peoples.
Well, the winner is the luminescent Nicole Beharie.
It's, of course, Nicole Beharie in the wonderful Miss Juneteenth. Fabulous, Murtada. You're off to a great start. Tiara coming your way, I suspect. Michael, for you, 2019, the director is Lulu Wang.
Oh, Awkwafina for The Farewell.
It surely is. Awkwafina in The Farewell. We are...
Oh, she should have been Oscar nominated too. Frustrate me the more we talk about these winners.
There are a few here that will be frustrating to realise they didn't make it to the Oscar stage. Namely, this one. Murtada, 2018, Ari Aster.
Oh, Toni Collette in Hereditary, yeah. Oh,
Toni Collette in Hereditary. And I assume you also agree she probably should have been in there for the Oscars.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I love Toni. So I have a story about Toni. Can I tell it now? Or do you need to
No, always.
So I interviewed Marion Cotillard many years ago when she was doing The Immigrant. She was doing press for The Immigrant, so I don't know how many years ago was that. And I asked her about her favorite actor, and she went on about Toni Collette in The Hours. And how that's her, like specifically her favorite actor is Toni Collette, but in The Hours, which is such a wonderful choice because Toni Collette just comes in and like, she's the best performance in that movie. Like, I don't care. She has, you know, that those two scenes, she's so wonderful. She comes in like a hurricane and you can't, she's so memorable. And so when Toni Collette was doing awards for Hereditary in New York, I went to a reception. And I got to talk to Toni Collette, and I told her that she is Marion Cotillard's favorite actor.
Oh my God!
What'd she say?
She was just so flabbergasted. She's like, "Oh my God, I love her so much. I didn't know that."
Oh my God! So, what a special moment. I love that. Oh my goodness! I'm very jealous you were able to share that with her. Oh, thank you for also sharing that, Murtada. Okie doke. So. Now we're moving on to 2017. Michael, this one's for you. The director is Greta Gerwig.
Saoirse Ronan. I feel like that film feels much more recent, but is it Saoirse Ronan?
It's Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird. Indeed it is.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, no notes. Perfect choice, perfect performance.
I agree with you.
Sadly not, even though we come from the same island, I'd love if I had a story like you do about Toni Collette, but I have nothing to say about Saoirse other than I love her.
Oh, I love that. All right, Murtada, next one for you. 2016, this is in a Paul Verhoeven film.
Oh, Isabelle Huppert in L.
Of course yes. It is.
I remember that. Oh, that was such a wonderful speech, too. She was so surprised she won. Yeah. And she was like, I don't know what this award is called, but I'm happy I won.
Any story with Isabel?
Unfortunately, no. But, you know, I'm hoping maybe next time I come talk to you guys, I'll have a Huppert.
Oh, my goodness. Please seek it out. Make it happen. But delighted that she is one of the ones who did make the cut. Fabulous nomination. Okie doke. Back to you, Michael. So we have 2015. The director is Marielle Heller.
For best actress, is it Belle Powley, one for Diary of a Teenage Girl? Is that what it was called?
I mean,
I'm obsessed with Marielle Heller, so this is like my niche sort of thing. But yeah, oh my God, what a film, what a performance, what a great choice. I guess Saoirse is young too, but Belle Powley's.
So I'm going to say something controversial. I love Belle Powley in that movie, and I think Belle Powley really should have Florence Pugh's career. And I think the fact that Florence Pugh came 2 years after Belle Powley did that wonderful performance and then Florence Pugh appeared, she stole all of Belle Powley's performance and roles, not performance, you know, she stole all of Belle Powley's roles. And I just think that we are worse for it.
Oh my God, I love it. Hot takes from Murtada. Oh my goodness, delivering more than we could have ever dreamed from this quiz. Stories and hard truth.
Oh my God, poor Florence is somewhere and she just feels like a sharp attack.
Oh, what just happened? Someone's talking about Belle Powley again.
I thought I got rid of that bitch, but
Murtada's on your case. Florence, I do still very much love you, even if Murtada doesn't. Anyway, on to 2014 for you, Murtada. This is Richard Glaser and Wash Westmoreland.
Well, this performance actually won the Oscar. This is Julianne Moore in Still Alice.
This sure is. The only one of the bunch that was one to go on to be an Oscar winner, in fact. And this anecdote's not nearly as exciting as yours, but since you've done it on a not too dissimilar Jean, I met Wash Westmoreland at the London Film Festival a few years ago, and I personally thanked him for getting Julianne Moore her Oscar, and he seemed to take it in good spirits. I'm sure he's heard it plenty of times from many gay men who flocked to him, but he was very, very lovely to talk to. He gave me a lot of time, which I was delighted by, and so I had to thank him personally for that. So yay, Wash, thank you. And then finally for 2013, Michael, we have a film directed by Destin Daniel Cretton.
I honestly wouldn't know.
Oh,
I don't know.
Have we got a pass? Murtada, can you take this one?
Yeah, it's short-term trial, Brie Larson.
You got it. Stumped at the end, clinched the victory by sneaking in. Yes, Brie Larson,
bro,
short-term 12.
If you thought Florence Pugh was my nemesis, Brie Larson is my real nemesis.
Oh, why?
Because she won the Oscar the year of Kate's fantastic performance in Carol. Like, really?
Yeah.
Room? What is Room? Does anybody talk about Room? Now, well,
I have a soft spot for Room. My bigger problem with Brie is that she won this Oscar, and what has she done with it? She's like, I obviously getting a lot of money for playing Captain Fantastic, whatever the fuck she played, Captain Marvel. But like, she's not doing anything else. And you're like, you should be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she's doing very lovely community focused things or something like that. But
yeah,
in terms of cinema, I don't think she's offered much. So
yeah,
no.
So I blame the Gotham win in 2013 for Short Term 12 for putting her on this award trajectory, where then she went on to steal Kate Blanchett's third Oscar for Carol. And let me tell you, that year she won over Kate Blanchett, who was also nominated for the Gotham for Blue Jasmine. And the thing is, the Gotham always does it. They don't give it to the big kahuna. Like, Kate Blanchett won every single award for Blue Jasmine, except the Gothams, apparently. So,
well, a fair grudge to hold. Do you at least like Brie's performance in Short Term 12?
No.
Standing firm. Okay, hope you're not listening, Brie. well, that wraps up the quiz. We have a victor. Murtada, the tiara is yours to prop beautifully upon your gorgeous head.
Well, you know, some good came out of Brie winning the Gotham. I got a tiara out of it. I love it.
Hooray for that. Love it.
Well, I don't mind losing to you. And particularly when we get to hear your kind of L-like vengeance, hatred for... Why has someone not made, like, a gay-orientated story about, like, a gay man who loves films and actresses too much and is so pissed off with someone winning over another person that they, like, go all crazy on them? Like, that would be an amazing... And you could literally take the Kate Blanchett and Carol Brie Larson in Room scenario as the...
Yeah.
Point of reference.
Well, yeah.
So on my podcast, Sundays with Kate, which is all about Kate Blanchett, I just basically wax poetic about Kate Blanchett every week for as long as I did that podcast. So I'm so happy that you guys gave me this chance to sort of talk about maybe actresses I don't like as much. Although I love Nicole Beharie, so.
We cover it all here. Wow, who would have known? What a platform. fabulous. Well, why don't we gaze into the future? We love Nicole and we want a lot more for her. And I feel confident that we are going to get a lot more for her. But Murtada, let's hand this over to you. So we asked you to come along with a few kind of different category areas. Do you want to take off, choose the first one you want to talk about for Nicole?
So I think one of the categories you asked me to is a remake, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I went the obvious way for, like, to think of remakes for, you know, a gay man obsessed with actresses and looked at Best Actress winners.
Yeah.
And so I went all the way back to 1944, one of the best winners in this category ever, which is Ingrid Bergman in Gaslight. And, like, wouldn't you love to see Nicole in a remake of Gaslight where... Like, it's something I don't think she has done. And if Gaslight is remade, I imagine it would be more horror adjacent than it was.
Sure.
But then Nicole will get to play all the psychological complexity of that character.
And her, like, we've talked about, like, Nicole's, like, screen presence is quite strong and independent. So to watch somebody, particularly with all the discussions that are, if people don't know about Gaslight, it's about a woman, Ingrid Bergman, as you say, in the original, who is terrorized by her husband, isn't it? They are married.
Yes.
So the term gaslighting comes from this. But with all the conversations about domestic abuse and all the sort of, dynamics that we haven't had as much discourse about, what a great time to bring it back. That is such a great idea. I love it. I love it. Because yeah, it could avoid the horror route and just be this sort of drama, like a psychological drama.
Yeah, and it could, like to your point, there could be such a modern take on it. Like a post-Me Too modern take on Gaslight with Nicole Beharie at the center of. That would be amazing.
With Brie Larson as her husband.
No, Brie Larson will not come near this movie.
And Florence Pugh as the light. Only joking.
What about your remake, Michael?
Well, I feel like mine is similar. I was thinking of like who or what sort of part has been celebrated that and the world that I would she could fit in, and I'd love to see her like kind of showcase her acting talents. And I was thinking Blue Valentine, the Derek Sheehan France, is that how you say his name? Film, which is about, so the film that exists is Michelle Williams, Ryan Gosling, a married, I don't know if actually they're married, but a couple in a long-term relationship, and they're having like their marriage is, or their relationship's breaking down, and it flashes back from when they met and fell in love to the present day where it's falling apart. And I mean, Michelle Williams and Ryan Gosling give such incredible performances because it's so, and it's so focused on them and built around them. But to watch Nicole do that would be such a gift. So yeah, I thought that would be, even though it's not entertaining to watch the film, it's quite hard, it's quite intense. I would still love to rewatch it again. And let's put, sure, Ryan Gosling can still be there. I don't mind. It could be anybody. I don't mind who the man is, but Nicole would be terrific.
Oh, I love that suggestion. I think it's great. And that's such a wonderful performance. It's Michelle Williams' best, in my opinion. So I would love to see another take on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Fabulous one, Michael. I went down then a very different path altogether. So thinking about her performance in Shame and what she did kind of in owning her sexuality and just being so sensual and present in a really incredibly magnetic way, I thought about how about we get a character who weaponizes on that, and I immediately went to Basic Instinct, and I would love to see Nicole take on Sharon Stone's role. I mean, Sharon Stone is incredible in that film, but let's again have a modernized version where we have a woman weaponizing something which is, you cannot see past how kind of sensual and exciting and extraordinary this person is, and I do believe that she can fully give that based on what we saw in those small scenes in Shame. So a very different path, but something I'd be very excited to see her take on.
Wow, that is so out of the box. I would have never thought of that, but I love it.
Oh. Here to surprise.
And so shall we go into sequels next? Because this is an interesting one, as we don't have many options of what sequels we would put Nicole in.
I mean, the obvious choice is, of course, Miss Juneteenth. So let's go back and see Turquoise 2 years later, 3 years later, however long it's been. But I think, you know, just because, you know, I saw this recently, I would like, it's not a remake or a sequel exactly, but, you know, A Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, from the point of view of Nicole characters.
Okay.
You know, because so we saw that story from Regina Hall's point of view in the movie, and now maybe we get another point of view. So I like Nicole in that sort of like, it's a satire about religion. I'd like to see a little bit more of that. That should be the center of that.
Love it. That's a great idea. Makes me even more excited to see that film anyway. Fabulous. Michael?
Well, mine is a bit of a cheat, and I would love to see a Rachel Robinson film. So kind of a sequel to 42, because I just think there must be some sort of story there and interesting. I'd also definitely have, you name it, anyone is slightly more interesting to write and direct the film. But like, if Spike Lee was going to do it at the 42 film at some point, maybe there is a story that can be told about Rachel Robinson, and he'd be interested. That was it. And Harrison Ford wouldn't be invited back, I would say.
And that would be great, wouldn't it? I would love to see Nicole Beharie work with Spike Lee. That's amazing.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that is a fabulous idea. So my suggestion was also just Miss Juneteenth because it felt like the right choice. And also, I do want to see where they are at, her and her daughter, and what has happened to them. Again, like you've said, Murtada, a couple of years later, let's revisit them. And yeah, what course are they on now? I do find that idea very exciting. So yeah, that was an easy choice for me. But then gazing to kind of the future and maybe looking to work with someone or in a certain kind of material, Murtada, what did you pitch here?
So my favorite filmmaker ever is Pedro Almodovar. And he is making his first English language movie starring my favorite actor, Cate Blanchett, A Manual for Cleaning Women, based on the book by Lucia Berlin. And that book is 30-something short stories. And I think he chosen 7 or 8, something like that. And he's going to tell those stories. So I don't, like, I've read the book, but I don't know which 7 he has chosen and what Cate is playing. But I know that he's been in LA meeting actors and actresses to cast in that movie. And I hope somebody put Nicole in his past that he looks at her. Because if you look at something like Parallel Mothers or All About My Mother, like, I would think Nicole would sort of just be so amazing in the Penelope Cruz part in Parallel Mothers or in the Cecilia Ross part in All About My Mother. And sort of that, because she's shown us, and this is obvious a little bit because she's played those sort of mothers in American Violet and in Miss Juneteenth, where the character's relationship with her child or her or her being a mother is a driving force of the character. So, and you know, Pedro is obsessed with mothers in all his movies. So I'm hoping that he has met her for A Manual for Cleaning Women.
Yeah, I have that written down too, because I would love it. It would be so, so good.
Well, that, I mean, hey, that sounds great to me. Always up for Pedro. I, off the back of seeing how great she was in Shame, I did feel like I want more Steve McQueen time. And more so off the back of what he's done recently with his Small Axe series, and especially the Lover's Rock entry into that. I feel like something within that nature and feeling, I think she could be wonderful in that. But then I kind of also thought of Barry Jenkins as being a really good pairing for her. I can just imagine that working so well. If Beale Street Could Talk, for example, I feel like she could work so well with his sensibilities as director and approach and the material and how he works with performers. I reckon he would get so much out of her and she would respond very well to working with him, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I love that suggestion. That's great. Like, imagine if he gave her something like what Regina King did in Beale Street Could Talk. Like that sort of like role that might not be the center of the movie, but the one you can't take your eyes off, the one you remember, the one who's just like, because Nicole is like that. She's somebody who can make those make a few scenes just matter so much more than maybe somebody else would make them.
Yeah, absolutely. But what a plethora of wonderful suggestions we've come up with. So yay for Nicole's future and all of these things materializing. I'm sure they're going to, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, if people should just watch Miss Juneteenth, casting director, directors, producers, everybody in Hollywood, and she will get cast in everything because it's such a wonderful showcase for her talents.
Yeah, it completely is. Amazing. Well, thank you so much for bringing her, Murtada. I am truly delighted that we got to spend some time with Nicole and get to chat about a wonderful performer. But talking about wonderful people, where can our listeners find you if they want to read more of your stuff? And also tell us more about Sundays with Cate for those who haven't listened to it.
So yeah, so I had this podcast, Sundays with Cate. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts and also at sundayswithcate.com. It's about Cate Blanchett's films. So every week I have a guest and we choose a Cate Blanchett film and we talk about it. I have about 50-something episodes, so I've covered everything. And obviously the big movies, The Blue Jasmine, The Carol, The Elizabeth, there are multiple episodes about those movies, or what I call a mini series. So covering the film from different perspective with different guests. So it was a project that I did over a couple of years, taking breaks. It's not like, you know, whole 2 years doing nothing but Cate Blanchett. I took breaks, but I did it over 2 years. It was, Cate is my favorite actor. When I was kind of coming into loving movies, I saw Elizabeth, and it was one of those things, oh my God, who's that? And she's someone who, you know, hasn't really disappointed me in so far, is that she's just went from strength to strength. And I was so happy to sort of put my critical lens and my fandom on one actor and come up with that project. So it is exactly that. It's a look from a critic and a fan at one actor.
Yeah, it's a great choice, and it is a really lovely podcast. I think it's really terrific, Murtada, so I fully recommend it to everyone. And what about if anyone would like to read some of your writing? Where can we find you at the moment?
Yes, so you can find my work at Into More, at Backstage, but mostly all my work you can find, you know, I would put it on Twitter, so you can follow me on Twitter at @ME_says, and that's where you find my work. And thank you so much, Scott and Michael. I love coming on this. I love this podcast. I love the idea from it. And I loved talking to you guys. It was such a wonderful time. Love talking about Nicole. And I apologize for your listeners who are fans of Florence Pugh and Brie Larson. I am usually a nice person.
You are. We know it.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad you don't feel the same way about us as you do about Florence, Brie, and I assume Gwyneth Paltrow. So I don't want to be on like on that list of people.
You know, the good thing about Gwyneth is that she stopped acting. So I now can have neutral feelings about her.
Well, I thought that was because you put some sort of, like, I don't know, spell on her, just a curse on her. Oh, my Lord. Fantastic. Yeah. And Scott, where can people find us if they want to follow along with the podcast?
Sure. So if you'd like to come and join us in the social media world, you can get us on Twitter and Instagram at @don'tknowher_pod. Or if you fancy dropping us an email, please do that. You can grab us at don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
Amazing. And yeah, thank you so much again, Murtada, for joining us, and for both of you, for allowing me finally to talk about Nicole and get her, check her off the list. It is so good. So yes, hopefully you all enjoyed, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks so much, Murtada. Thanks, Michael. Have a lovely day, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.